This is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, thanks to polymorphgames.com.au. Originally broadcast on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Good evening all on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh this week on the 27th of April. This is episode 163.
Whoop.
And sadly, in a week where we're as close to humanly possible to World War III that we have been since the Cold War. But that's not at all the most important news of the week, is that Hasbro's first quarterly review has surpassed Mattel's for the first time in 17 years because of a board game. And of course, it's a board game we know and love called Toilet Trouble.
What?
Basically, Toilet Trouble, from what I've read, is kind of like a sequel to Pie Face. You know, that game that went viral because you got all cream in your face?
No, tell me it's not a toilet seat that flaps up with a turd on top of it.
No, that would be vulgar, but I do believe it involves somebody putting their face near a thing and water spraying in their face. So anyway, that's the kind of level of entertainment you're looking forward to in the next hour or so. I am Leon, joined by myself and young Mark.
And we've got a special guest in the studio, Leon.
We do, which we'll introduce after this first break. But Mark, what are we doing on the show this evening?
Well, tonight, you've been playing a game with our special guest.
Indeed, I have.
So we're going to talk about that. We're going to grill our special guest about his gaming life, his non-gaming life, his loves, his hates, and all those things. All questions he doesn't know he's going to get. We're going to have a bit of news and a bit of talk about International Tabletop Day.
Yes.
I'm going to play some rockin' tracks like this.
Lovely. Wow, Mark, that was terribly rockin'. Trent is rolling over in his sick bed at the moment. That is not rock in the slightest.
Computer says rock.
Well, it lied. Either way, this is The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This week brought to you by polymorphgames.com.au, the best online store that is close to as brick-and-mortar Australian store as you can get. And with the promo code PODCAST, all in capital letters, you can get 10% off the already amazing prices. Now, Mark.
Prices so cheap.
Yes. We have a special guest in the studio.
Leon, tell me who it is.
It is a man named Sam. Say hello, Sam.
Hello.
Hello, Sam.
And now, Mark, you're going to talk to Sam because you don't know him as well as I do.
I hardly know Sam at all.
Well, he's been in my house a few times, but I don't really know him either myself. I don't know how he got there, but he was just there one morning.
So, Sam, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Now, of course, we should say that Garth is off travelling around Southeast Asia somewhere, the dirty rock.
With a big old smile on his face, and Trent is doing the exact polar opposite.
Yeah, which sick is at home.
So, sick at home.
The whole family's sick.
Writhing around in bed with a big old frown on his face. The frown's normally there, but the sickness is not normally.
That's right. So it's Leon and I tonight with our special guest, Sam. Now, you guys have been playing some games recently, but I want to take the opportunity to say hello to Sam and just give him a bit of a Dice Man grilling to find out a little bit about him. Now, Sam, you're obviously a gamer.
Correct.
And now, you two met at PAX, was that right?
Yes, we met at PAX when Sam moderated one of the werewolf games that I played, which then eventually got me into being a moderator myself, along with Sam.
Yeah.
And then the whole crazy catastrophe went along from there.
That's right, and that led to the Silver Bullet Society. Now, so obviously you're a keen werewolfer, Sam.
Yes, very much so.
But apart from that, so let's talk board games. Are you into your board games?
I am, yeah. Have been probably for about the last 6 years.
Oh, okay. What?
That's longer than me. What am I doing here?
I was going to say, what got you back into this sort of modern genre of board games, or this renaissance we're having now?
It all came about through friends. I got invited to a D&D night, of all things, with some old colleagues. Headed along to that. Enjoyed that more than I thought I would, and then that it ended up leading into learning to play a lot of games that I didn't know existed.
Such as?
We started off with some simpler stuff like Catan,
yep.
Pandemic.
Of course.
Moved on to things a little more silly like Ugtect and Jungle Panic. But yeah.
Fantastic. And now, so have you got into any of your heavier Euro games, you sort of, you know, your worker placement, your economic engine building, those sort of games at all?
I'm not too sure. We do play a lot.
Yeah.
Big old boring games is what he's trying to get at.
No! So what about worker placement? Say like, what's the
you would
D&D
have played
one I'm
Lords
thinking of?
Lords of Waterdeep,
yeah,
surely.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Lords of Waterdeep is what we play.
So something like Lords of Waterdeep, but perhaps a bit more complex? How complex do your games get compared to, say, Lords of War to do?
Generally, we side on the easier side.
Okay.
We have a pretty casual group of people that I play with.
Yeah.
Although, definitely willing to delve a bit deeper.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. And yeah. What? So, your D&D, are you still doing that?
Very irregularly.
Irregularly?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And what edition?
We're playing 5e.
Okay, because yeah. I still haven't played that, apart from a very brief test run with the Nerdzilla guys when it was first about to come out. Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, very much so. Been playing that probably for 5th edition, probably for a year and a half now.
Okay.
Although, yeah, very irregularly.
Oh, cool. So, and what about other types of role-playing games? Do you get into those at all?
Haven't yet, but definitely willing to try.
I'm assuming the very unregularly is just generally getting people together.
Yeah, correct.
And Sam is a kind of, the reason I think we get along relatively well is because his group of friends are similar to mine in that the games they play are more of the backstabby, want to kill each other kind of games.
Very yes. much
so, yeah.
Which is what us youngins are into these days.
Yes.
Although I can no longer say that because I'm 30. And
so more Amerithrash as opposed to Euro games.
Because
I was going to ask you, minis, obviously the game we're going to be talking about, Spectre Ops, is a minis game. You played many other these big mini behemoths from Kickstarter?
Played a couple.
Descent, maybe?
Descent, that was it.
Ah, yep. There you go. Yeah, look, that's an oddie goodie. And the other thing I wanted to ask you on that vein is, where do you weigh in on the Gloomhaven equation? Do you know anything about Gloomhaven?
I don't. It's one of those ones that I've got friends that have, but we just never played it.
Ah, now, Leon, I've been meaning to ask you that.
Yes.
So you're a man who loves a campaign.
I do love a campaign.
They don't come any much bigger than the campaign in Gloomhaven. I think is it 94 different little modules, which
supposedly.
You may or may not play all of them.
Yep.
Where do you come in on the Gloomhaven side of
things? I love the idea, but reality has kind of hit me in the last few years.
Yeah.
That having games that you have to play multiple times, it's just not really in the cards, unfortunately, for someone like myself and getting friends together on a regular basis. But from what it sounds utterly amazing.
Look, I have that dilemma because it sounds like it would be the most amazing game and you just really be able to build such an experience. But at the same time, you know, 5 or 6 or 10 or 20 hours, even before you start getting into the meaty stuff...
Yeah.
When
it's a bit,
and nobody got time for that.
It's a bit grindy, and yeah, you don't have really that kind of time thing. But also, the one good thing we've been told about it is that you can drop in and drop out. So
yeah.
I believe so. You can get other people to kind of take over the role. So it's not like once you start a campaign of a certain game, you have to stick with that entire group, and that's where you end up.
Yeah, or even you can run multiple groups.
Yep.
Basically with the same set where you're, if you like, different people in that same environment.
Yeah.
Where you don't interact directly, but you. What you do affects the environment, and then someone else might go somewhere where you've been and find the campfire from the last person, or the fact that someone has already been and looted it.
So you could literally ditch the game, play it with like 5 people, ditch it to a different 5 people and say, this is roughly what we did, figure it out from there.
Yeah.
Which I think is a pretty cool idea. Anyway, back to young Sam. We've got him here. Might as well talk to him.
No worries. I just wanted to ask you about that. Now, Sam, Kickstarter. Now, every man and his dog's got a game on Kickstarter. Every man and his dog is backing 1 million Kickstarters a month. Do you follow Kickstarter? Do you keep an eye on what's happening there?
No, I don't. Not at all.
And why is that? It's something that you told me only earlier when we were having a burger and a pint. It's because a certain kind of gamer that you are. And what kind did you explain?
I'm probably the worst kind of gamer. I'm a bit of a leech.
Yeah.
I don't purchase many games myself.
Which is why all of a sudden he's now friends with me.
Perfect. You two are the perfect match.
Because the man that just buys absolutely everything. So yeah, as we said before, the reason we met was because of Werewolf at PAX. So the most important question I think we've got to get to is that how did you become a moderator for that game when you only just got into the hobby a few years ago? And how did you, you know, become relatively good at it in such a short amount of time?
I got into that through PAX, actually.
Okay.
A group of friends and I have been attending for the last 3 years.
Yep.
And it's one of our regular nighttime events. We all go to the Werewolf games.
Yep.
And one night there was just no one there to moderate. No one was willing to do it.
Yep.
Our regular guy had stepped out, so I took up the position.
Wow, which is a very intimidating thing, I would think, for a lot of people to just go, yep, just going to jump in front of these 20 people, most of which I don't know, in this room of 10,000 people that I definitely don't know.
Yeah, very much was. Very rewarding, though.
No, obviously, you've done it for a few years now, and you've gotten a lot better at it, but just jumping into the fire like that, it must have been interesting. How did you go that first game?
Very poorly.
Very poorly?
Very poorly. Made a lot of mistakes.
That sounds about right.
But thankfully, the community at PAX is quite forgiving. Yes.
So that you've done that the last, is it three PAXes?
We've attended the last three. I think I've been moderating
for the
last two.
That's all the PAXes, isn't it, I think?
Yeah.
This is year five.
This is the fifth year.
Okay. So. The first year, I'm assuming, was probably a lot smaller than what it became soon after that.
Yeah, I think the first year was at Melbourne Racetrack.
I was going to say, because I know we went to the first one that was at Jeff's shed, which was not last one, not the one before, but so 3 years ago.
Yep.
And then we missed one, and then we were at last year. So are you going back to moderate again this year?
Hopefully, yeah. I'd love to get a ticket.
You get a free ticket for moderating Werewolf.
There's
an idea.
Perhaps.
Haven't yet, but would love to.
Oh, okay.
I might be doing the same thing.
Unless
we can get media passes being celebrities and all.
Well, you know, that's the life of a celebrity.
We will wait and see closer to the date.
You've got to mooch the best you can. So, outside of games, Sam, what do you do?
I'm an electrician.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. I've been doing that I'm in my fifth year now.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, because coincidentally, Sam used to work at EB Games, which is where I used to work.
Yes.
And funnily enough, because Tasmania is the smallest place in the world, we only discovered earlier, he started probably a couple of weeks after I did. He essentially probably took my job after I left. And we had no idea whatsoever.
Would have been very close with the timing.
So funny.
Yeah.
Okay, well, look, Sam, it's great to have you on board tonight. And I hope you don't feel like you're getting a grilling there. But I'm going to give you a rest for a little while because we're going to go to a track. And when we come back, you two are going to talk all about this Minifest Spectre-Ops.
Minifest, there's like five of them.
Well, that's a Minifest to me. You know, there's no little wooden people-shaped people.
Is this song, is it going to be rocking, Mark?
I'm not going to make a prediction.
Yeah, because it worked out so well last time.
It says punk, but look, that could mean anything.
Okay, let's see.
Back shortly. Punk gets softer every year, I reckon, because that was supposedly, Leon, two punk tracks.
Oh, we're so hardcore.
The Garden, This Could Build Us a Home, followed by Savages with T-I-W-Y-G.
Yeah, sure, why not?
This is what you game with. Something like that. Where the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. Very proudly sponsored by Polymorph Games and Hobbies, purveyors of the finest games and gaming paraphernalia. And remember, the code PODCAST will get you an extra 10% off.
Now, capital letters, podcast.
Yes. Now, Leon, Sam,
yes.
What have you been playing?
We have been playing a game called Spectre Ops, which I'm going to tell you about. It's by Plaid Hat Games, so one of my favourite. It's a 2-5 player hidden movement game. So think Fury of Dracula, think Scotland Yard, think Letters from Whitechapel and...
Nuns on the Run?
Nuns on the Run and this, because there's only five of them.
So this could be like Guns on the Run.
Sure, why not? So it's but it's a sci-fi hidden movement game where one of you plays as a spy and the others play as hunters. So as the secret agent, you're an agent of an organization called ARK. What do you think that stands for? A stands for agent. What do you reckon the R and K stand for?
Really cool.
Yeah. Sam, anything?
No, I've got nothing.
Okay. It's Agents of a Reclaimed Kingdom, which I think sounds pretty pimp, even though it's in the future, which is a bit weird.
Yeah.
So you've infiltrated a Raxon experimental security facility, which is, you know, a big thing.
Hey, hang on.
Hang on, what?
Raxon.
Yes. Yes.
Dead of Winter.
That's a good point.
Plaid Hat crossover.
In the expansion for Dead of Winter.
It's Raxon Corp.
Yes,
there are. Where those mega zombies are coming.
Their umbrella knockoff is called Raxon Corp. There you go. Look at you adding stuff.
Wow.
Either way, so you infiltrate this facility in attempt to gain intel to uncover the truth about Raxon's experiments so you can tell the world of the true horrors of the corporation that runs this not-so-perfect society.
Raxon? Raxon.
That's horrible. Anyway, while the other players play as the Raxon Experimental Security Force themselves, a group of hunters who are aiming to hunt the human down. But they're humans themselves that have been modified by science. But they're secretly trying to uphold the will of their global corporation to keep all the populace in check.
I wondered about that because I did see the you sent me some pictures and I posted them up on Instagram of the minis.
Yep.
And only one of them looks sort of vaguely humanoid.
They are. They're all humans in there, but they've all been modified slightly. Now, so that's basically the theme of the game. Now, Sam, as we were playing it, did you get any of that theme or story whatsoever?
Not at all.
No, it's not at all. It's very, very thin, sadly to say. Okay. Which, I mean, like, all the board looks cool and all the minis look cool and all that kind of stuff, but the actual story itself is nearly non-existent. Even on the cards, for the characters. That could easily be just a flavor quote, flavor text, nothing.
And that's not typical from Plaid Hat.
No.
They're usually pretty good with the with their theme.
Yeah, either way. So the game is played on a large board that is broken up into over 700 different little grid spaces. So the agent player gets to secretly choose their character from four different ones, which won't get revealed until the hunter spots them in the game. So they don't actually know who you are. So the four different characters, there's the spider, who is harder to hit. There is the cobra, who can ambush hunters if they happen to land on the same spot as them,
yep,
and stun them so they can scatter away. There is the orangutan, which is what I used, which has more health. So I basically used him as a buffer because I didn't really know what I was doing.
Yeah.
So I figured more health would be a good idea. And then there's the blue jay, who can complete objectives from two spaces away instead of one, which I'll get to later because that is very important. You also get to choose certain number of equipment cards. So depending on the number of players, they go up or down depending on the players. And there are some that are specific to the characters as well that are you get to use twice, but all the other ones you get to use just the once. So there's things like a stealth field where the enemy can only see you if you're very close. There's a smoke grenade that can block line of sight, adrenaline surge, which gets you to move six spaces instead of four. And as I said, each character has these special ones off themselves. Like the blue jay can create a hologram of herself and then run away from the enemy because they're all going after the hologram because they're stupid hunters. Or the orangutan, like I said, he can smash people in the face and stun them as he kind of sluggishly walks away, which all came in handy from time to time. So the agent player also gets a movement pad, which is really, really cool. And they secretly jot down on that pad where they are, where they've been, what cards they've used, and when. So all this secret information that only they know and nobody else. So on your turn, you can move between zero and four spaces, because sometimes it is very helpful to just sit there and do nothing. And the aim of the game, there are four objectives on the board. The aim of the game is to activate three of them. Out of the four, and get the hell out of there. So in a 2-3 player game, the enemies know where these objectives are, so they know where you're going. In a 4-5 player game, there's more of the hunters, but they have no idea where you are. Which was interesting, because when we started playing this, you were a hunter, weren't you, Sam?
Correct.
I say you were a hunter because something happened in the middle of the game that we'll get to in a minute. But at the time, you had no idea where I was going or what I was doing. How was that, not knowing a clue what I was doing?
It was an interesting way to start a game.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, you kind of, sadly, very quickly, because I played with four people, including Sam, that aren't stupid, all worked out very, very quickly, well, if he's kind of there-ish, then he must have done this exact route. And I'm sitting there going, how have they done this already? I hate people that think. They just ruin every game when they're sitting there thinking about stuff. Yeah, so on your turn, you do all that movement and stuff, and then the hunters, they get to choose between four different possible characters, each with their special ability. There's the gun, who Sam was, who can shoot further than anybody else. They can use a quick draw, so if an agent goes into their line of sight, they can take a pot shot. They can also do a thing at the end of their turn where they state a direction, say north, south, east, west, and if the agent moves into that field, they take a damage instantly. So they go like on Overwatch, which is just, it's just horrible.
It's a little bit overpowered.
It is a little bit overpowered, although in our game it didn't really matter too much. Again, we will get to that in a minute, because otherwise that would have been absolutely horrible to deal with. Then there's the puppet, who looks like a robot, but apparently is a human in some way. Must be a very thin human inside that robot, I assume. So what they can do is that they can remotely move the car that's on the board. Oh, did I mention there's a car, Mark?
A space car.
There's a space car, and I'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
So they can remotely move the car without being in it, as well as using the motion sensor in the car without being in it, that I'll explain further. And then there's the prophet, who is an annoying little precog that has all these psychic abilities and whatnot. What they can do is they can ask a player where they were two turns ago. So they can make the net even smaller. And they also, a thing that if you play with the prophet, every turn that you're going to get an objective, you have to announce that the next turn you're completing an objective. So they're always going to know roughly where you've got to.
Okay, yeah.
Because the way you complete an objective is that you start your turn next to one, and then you just automatically take it and then run away. So when you're playing with a prophet, you've got to tell them, I'm about to complete an objective, and they go, oh, well, he must be in that space right there.
So do you have to tell them which objective it is?
No, absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
Because that would be insane.
Yeah, yeah.
But by this time, if they're relatively cleverish, they've figured it out. And then, my favouritest of all the people that were hunting down, the beast, or, spoilers, the one that slaughtered me. So what the beast can do is that if they can move up to five spaces instead of four, which is the fastest moving thing in the game, but if they move three or less, they can do a thing called sniff. And if they do that, they can sniff out, and the player has to tell them if they're within four spaces of the wolf or not.
Wow, that's a big, big area.
That is, but you've got to remember in this game you can move diagonally. So four spaces is rather large-ish. Okay. But what the beast can do is if they land on top of you and attack you, they can do two damage instead of one. So they can move fast and do double damage, because that's what you want. So the way they win, because the agent has to do their objectives and get the hell out of Dodge, but what they have to do to win is do four damage to the agent, or six to the orangutan, mm-hmm. and kill them, and that's it. That's all they got to do, which is just not fun.
Yeah.
But anyway, this car that we talked about, this famous space car that we've been talking about for all 5 seconds.
Yes.
So all the bad guys start in a car, and they can get out at any time.
Road trip!
Yeah. Even though you're in like a facility, which is kind of weird that there are roads in the facility, but that's beside the point.
It's like a golf cart, is it? That lazy people ride around
on. No, it's a proper car.
Looks pretty fancy.
Yeah.
Well, you have it offside the board, and it's a kind of little stand they put onto. On the board, it's only this little kind of cardboard token.
Okay.
Which is a bit, and I'll get to that bloody soon.
Yes.
So that everyone starts in the car, and you can get out of the car or into the car on your turn. The car can move up to 10 spaces, and it moves everybody that's in the car.
Okay.
But that 10 spaces, you can do it all at once if you wanted to, but it's over all the four bad guys' turns. So someone could move it 3 spaces, get out. The next person could jump in the driver's seat, move it 4 spaces, get out.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. But the other thing the car can do, which is really, really annoying to the agent, which I was, is they can use the motion sensor instead of moving. What the motion sensor does is that the agent has to tell the people where they are in relation to the car by way of direction. So if you're southwest of the car, you've got to say, I'm southwest. But if you move less than 2 spaces on your turn, you say no detection because you haven't set it off, which I thought thematically is really clever to say I've only been tiptoeing around, so they haven't done it. So that's the way they move the car. So line of sight in these games is very, very important. So how you actually get seen.
Yes.
So because if you move all the diagonals and stuff, you can run away relatively quickly-ish sometimes. The enemies can't see on diagonals. They can only see on your horizontal and your vertical.
Yes.
So if you're running around, if you run past them, like run exactly past them and end your turn somewhere else, you put down these things called last seen tokens, which shows that you did see me here, but I'm not there anymore.
Okay, yeah.
And then but if you actually get seen, like directly in their vision, so they stop their turn and you're within one of those places they can see,
yes,
then you reveal your character.
Okay, so you put your mini on the board.
You put your mini on the board and say, this is who I am, and they go, oh, it's that character, we can slaughter them very, very easy.
Okay, so that gives away, like, what your special... Do they know the different special abilities?
There's one that's a passive one that's on the card.
Yeah.
But also it gives away that maybe a certain special card you could have in your hand. But they don't know, because you get to choose certain equipment cards, but they don't know.
Okay.
So then when it comes down to attacking, all it is a roll of a dice. So if they say 3 spaces away from you, they have to roll a 3 or higher to hit you. And all the characters can do that. If they roll a 1, it's an instant fail. Yeah. So if they're right next to you and they roll a 1, they fail. Or even if they're on the same square as you, they roll a 1, they fail. However, what they can also do is if they roll a 6, they get to roll another dice.
Oh.
So they could be 13 spaces away from you
and
just roll the dice a lot and be able to hit you. It's unlikely, but it can be done. Whereas the gun, if I remember rightly, Sam, gets to roll 2 dice. So they become like a sniper pretty much straight away and can shoot you very, very far away. But Sam didn't do that.
No, I didn't get the chance.
No. And I'm going to tell you why in a second. So one of the big key pluses of this game is the how it changes with a different player count.
Yeah.
So it's 2 to 5 players. So if you play 2 players, the bad guy takes 2 bad guy characters, you take the good guy character, they know where the objectives are, go ahead.
Yeah, so it's 2v1.
Yep. Well, 2 characters for 1 person.
Yeah.
If you have another person, you split up the 2 bad guys. They each take 1, and then it's the same game. If you have 4 players, there are 3 bad guys, but the good guy, because he's got 3 hunters coming after them, you get 2 extra health, and you get 2 extra equipment cards as well.
Oh, okay.
And the bad guys don't know exactly where the objectives are. They know a basically kind of a thing, because the objectives, there's 4 different sections of the game. Before you start, you roll a dice, and you mark down on your little map, on your bit of paper, which objective is the actual objective that you're going to. If they know if you're in a certain section, they know he's going to maybe that objective, but they're not 100% sure.
Mm.
But if you play 5 players, so all 4 bad guys are coming for you.
Yes.
But you don't get that extra health. You don't get that extra equipment, which you'd think, that makes no sense. Hang so they on, get another character and you lose that stuff. But what does happen is that one of them is a traitor.
Oh, wow.
Which is why I was saying before, because Sam never got to shoot me, because Sam was the traitor.
Yes, I was.
Yes. And what happens with the traitor is something that really is a really cool idea. It screws with the mechanics of the game in that if you have line of sight, if the traitor has you in their line of sight, you don't have to put anything down. You don't have to put down a last scene or you get revealed, nothing. So the player, you could be walking right in front of them and that person's just like, you know, in thematic terms, you're going like, get past me, you bloody idiot. They can tell. So it doesn't get revealed. They can even shoot you if you're on the board, have an attack at you. And instead of writing down a little cross on your pad that you've been attacked, you just pretend to write it down. So they can attack you and you can just go, oh, you shot me, now I've only got 3 health left. And just don't mark anything down whatsoever.
Wow.
It doesn't give it away.
So do you each other know
yes.
that the other is the traitor?
When you start the game, you do the kind of resistance. Everyone close their eyes.
Okay.
Traitor, reveal yourself. Now I know who you are and whatever else. And we go from there. So they can choose to reveal themselves at any time. Or eventually, if, say, they've got line of sight to you, you haven't revealed yourself.
Yeah.
But then another bad guy comes in who's got the same line of sight and then you reveal yourself. They go, shouldn't that have been revealed? Hang on a tick. You traitorous scumbag.
So that, I was thinking at the start, well, you know, apart from the theme, what makes this different from, you know, Letters from Whitechapel, Scotland Yard, Nuns on the Run, what was it? Fury of Dracula.
Yep.
Straight away, that is a really interesting twist because I don't know of any other game. I mean, Battlestar Galactica, you've still got the two groups, but you don't have, I guess once one Cylon gets revealed, it's a little bit like that, but you don't have the tactical movement part of that. That's really quite an interesting twist.
And also, you don't have to give any real information. So if Sam was the one in the car and did the motion sensor thing, if he was the only one in that car, I could have said whatever I damn well please.
Yeah, okay.
I could have said, I'm north, and they would have went, what? He was southwest 2 turns ago.
Yeah, okay.
Like, just bullshit.
Yeah.
Which, you know, could have happened, but didn't, because unfortunately we got found out very quickly.
Very quickly.
But there was one thing that was absolutely awesome, because about 4 or 5 turns in, Sam was right next to me twice in a row, and they had, other players had, and even Sam himself, because he didn't know where I was.
Yes.
Had no idea whatsoever, but he was right next to me. So he would have been, I probably would have been dead if he wasn't a traitor within the first few turns.
Well, because that seems to me like a valid strategy, is ghosting, like basically follow him around.
Yeah.
And when they're looking, they can't see you because they can't see past him. Is that...
No, they can all see past each other, but they don't know where you are on the board. So if they could see past him, but because it was just, we worked out that the only person on the board could see me was Sam, and no one else could.
Mm.
So it just worked out perfectly.
Got lucky, really.
We got lucky at first, not near the end. But what did happen eventually is that Sam got found out, they figured it out. What happens then is Sam takes his bad guy mini off the board, and he, just like me, becomes another agent.
Oh,
so he gets to grab one of the other remaining characters. He gets a couple of equipment cards himself.
Mm.
He gets his own little sheet of paper, although we just shared mine.
Yeah.
We actually put up a screen, like a D&D Dungeon Master type screen. We got it from Mysterium. We took that screen.
Yes.
And we were just sitting behind that. But the only problem is where we come up with a bit of a flaw in this game, especially the 5-player, is that Sam couldn't really do much, could you?
No, there didn't seem to be a whole lot that I could do to help.
No, because he couldn't get objectives. That was the thing.
Okay.
They become like another character, but they can't take the objectives. But you can't really... We got Sam to choose the Cobra, because that gave him the ambush ability. So if somebody landed on him, he could stun them and kind of run away.
Yes.
As well as he could be a bit of a meat shield. But if Sam got killed, we lost the game completely.
Oh,
so if only one of us got killed... So he couldn't... He just kind of stood at the back and annoyed them, quite literally. It was just like jumping in, giving them a cheeky tap, and then run away.
So he can't be too much of a decoy.
No, because he could get killed, as well as you can't really attack them. You can just give him a bit of a stun and then run away.
So once he gets found out, and then his mini comes on the board, then if he goes out of sight, does his mini then go off the board just like yours?
Yep. Technically, he does the same as me. He doesn't reveal who he is until they find him again.
Because potentially then I guess you've got the fact that they get a ping off someone, and then they don't know which of the two of you it is. So he can sort of, he can spoil as far as that goes. But as we said, he can't get too close and be too much of a pain in the ass because if he gets killed, that's the end of the game for you guys.
Yeah, pretty much. And like, that was the thing that like, they kind of ignored him to a sense, because I was the only one that could complete objectives. And by that point, I'd only grabbed one, I think.
Yeah,
I was on my way to the second one.
Okay.
And then to the third one, there's like, well, Leon's the only one that could get objectives, so let's keep going after him. Sam can either try and annoy us if he wants, but it's not that big a deal. Or if he gets really in our face, we'll just try and kill him, which is what nearly happened.
Yeah, I got down to 2 health, I think. Maybe 1.
I think you got down to 1 by the end of it.
Yeah.
And then you... very smartly scarp it away and tried to run for the exit. And then I tried to do the same thing, because I did get my 3 objectives and was trying to get out. But by that point, Because of the roads in this game, which the cars can only travel on the roads, which are these real big line of sight. And
Double wide.
Yeah. And if you're on, say, the left side and they're on the right side, they can see you because it's just like looking down a big highway. You have to cross them sooner or later because, like I said, my friends, unfortunately, aren't stupid when it comes to games anyway. Yes. And they had guys always on that line of sight.
Okay.
So I actually thought it'd be easy because I thought they're going to put Sam on that line of sight because he's a sniper. So I'm going to be able to cross these big roads easy as. But they didn't do that. They put Josh, who was the puppet guy, on the damn road near the car because he could move it. And I just got lucky that Sam was behind me. But that's pretty much what happens.
So, Sam, have you played anything like this before at all?
No, this was very different for me.
Wow.
I've played a few games with the trader mechanic, but nothing with completely hidden movement.
So, Leon, how do you think this stacks up against those other games we mentioned, your Fury of Draculas?
It's... All right, we need to play it through again, and I've been told this game is actually better with a smaller player count number.
Okay.
Because it did take a while. It probably took us about 3 hours or so, but that was our first game. But the thing is, though, it wasn't a boring 3 hours, and it wasn't a 3 hours sitting there just going, oh, God, this has taken ages. Do you not think?
No, it did take a while, and from the trader's seat, it did drag a little bit.
Yeah, because the trader, like I said, you can't really do that much. You get found out as a trader. Like, beforehand, it was kind of... But even when you were a bad guy hunting me, you couldn't really do that much. Because you just basically helped them, because what more could you really do?
Yeah.
And then when you got outed eventually, it was just like, I can kind of do a little, but,
So do you think there's enough of a wrinkle of difference in this to recommend it to people who have those other games?
It's recommend a play of it, sure. Yeah. But all those other games are really good. But a few other things about it, like the miniatures are really nice, and the art of everything. The board itself is really pretty and nice and shiny. And there's this cool thing with the, like I said, it's on a grid system, which if you're the agent player, you can just look at your pad. If not, everyone else is looking at the board. They've got this cool thing that even in like sunlight, if you kind of turn your eyes to the side, the letters on them really light up.
Okay, I saw that in the photo. Yeah, all the letters, the grid.
So bits on the board can be blacked out, but you can still see all the grid coordinates, which is really, really nice.
Yeah.
The game's gagging for an expansion, which sadly might not come because it's been out for about 2.5 years and there's been no word of it.
Yeah,
but then again, they took ages getting Dead of Winter out, and that game was successful as hell.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say. But new characters, maybe a new board, new equipment cards. Also, the book itself, the manual is really short, which is lovely because everyone loves a simple game.
Yes.
But there's heaps of little niggling questions in this game. And I know Plaid Hat tests a lot.
Yes.
They could have easily done a double spread in the end of this book of an FAQ.
Yeah, okay.
And it would not have hurt them so, because there was a few BGG times, which there always is in a new game. But in this game, I especially felt that they could have easily put in there. Again, they're having no flavor text is a bit eh. And also the analysis paralysis of really thinking through this game could be an absolute killer. So it's worth having a play, and I'd like to play it again. It's not one of those games I went, I've played it now, it's not for me,
going
to sell it on, or it's not definite, going to keep this forever. It's sitting in the middle, which often doesn't happen for me, but it's worth a crack. What do you think, Sam?
No, I really enjoyed it. I think we'd definitely benefit from a second playthrough.
Yeah.
And potentially with fewer players.
Yeah, because once you get down fewer, then it's more of a definitely a one versus all kind of thing if you don't have that trader aspect to it. But the fact that it is every different player count is a different kind of game.
Yeah.
2 and 3 are kind of similar, but 4 and 5 are completely different
than
2 and 3. So it's definitely worth a crack, but it may not be for everybody.
Okay. Well, fantastic. Look, let's throw to a track and come back. We'll talk about the news and International Tabletop Day.
Lovely.
Hello everyone, just Leon here, your friendly neighbourhood dice man and editor, just to interrupt for a second to let everyone know that we have Patreon now. Woo! We've had people over the years ask how they can support our show, and we finally have an awesome way to do that. So if you jump over there, you can give us a couple of bucks. That would be wicked. We don't ask for much. We don't want you to break the bank at all. I myself personally am a massive podcast junkie. I give to 7 or 8 different podcasts, I think. Either at, say, $5 or $1, just to help kind of support the ones that have supported me over the years. So something like, you know, $5, what's that? That's a cup of coffee every month. You're probably not going to miss it. You'd forget it a few seconds later. Or even $1 a month. People go, oh, it's only $1. Why would I even bother? If everyone that was listening to me right now gave us $1, we would be over the moon. That stuff definitely adds up. So check it out if you want. Also, you can jump over to redbubble.com and check out our merch. So we've got t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, whatever you want. And finally, As you guys have noticed, in the last few weeks, we've been doing some advertising now, which is pretty cool. So anyone out there that's a game designer, game developer, a brick and mortar store, an internet site that has something to do with board gaming, we are more than happy for you to be our sponsor, and we're more than happy to do an ad for you. We've done a couple of late for Rule and Make and for Grail Games, and we had awesome fun doing it, and the guys over there seem really happy with what we did for them. So if you want some more information about that, feel free to send us an email at dicemencometh@gmail.com, and our sexy assistant, well, Garth, will get back to you as soon as possible. Cheers very much, everybody, and back to the show.
Wow, that was as metal as you get. That was The Sign with Cry a Little Tear on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. This week, proud to you brought you by? Don't know what I'm doing.
Polymorphgames.com.au,
the little website that could, with great deals. And if you put in the code podcast in capital letters, you'll get an extra 10% off, thanks to us and Polymorph Games.
Now, I'm going to do my best Trent impersonation. It's time for the news. And
yes,
in the news, of course, this weekend, Saturday, April the 29th, is
International Tabletop Day.
Hurrah.
For those who didn't know.
Yes, good.
So they're actually having a theme this year for International Tabletop Day, apart from just tabletop games.
Yeah.
The theme is, how did board games change your life? Aww. And I thought, you know what? Just something super quick. I moved back to Tasmania after being away for like 18 years. Didn't really know anyone. Hated all my old school buddies, you know. And I met new friends through gaming. And in fact, two of the friends I met at a gaming night at a strange guy's house. He is strange, trust me. But one of them was Trent.
Funnily enough.
And one of them was Carl.
Ah.
And of course, Garth is Trent's brother-in-law. So that's how that all happened.
And I'm awesome.
Yeah.
So that fits in as well.
Board games have changed our life, no doubt about that. So there is, there's a lot happening. There's 10 events in Sydney this Saturday. One of them is GX Australia. Now, I think it stands for, I don't know if it's Game Expo or Geek Expo, or do either of you guys know what GX stands for?
Not sure. I think I saw it today for the first time because someone we know is going there.
Yeah, that's right. So it's on Friday, Saturday, Sunday in Sydney at the Sydney Showgrounds.
Yep.
Now, it's in its second year and it claims to be the most inclusive gaming and geek convention in Australia. Now, I thought PAX was pretty inclusive, so...
Well, considering anyone could buy a ticket and just walk in.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty inclusive, as long as you can afford it.
But look,
poor people, everyone else is fine.
Yeah, that's right. Now, there are lots of interesting panels and discussions, lots of free gaming with video gaming and tabletop gaming. And our own Dice Woman, Tanya, is speaking on a panel entitled, You Should Make a Tabletop Game.
That makes sense, because she's done that.
That she has. So I've pinned her down to come on the show next week and tell us all about what GX Australia was about and her panel and all the other things.
Lovely. Okay?
Now, speaking of tabletop, of course, you can't talk about tabletop without talking about Will Wheaton.
Well, you could, but we're not going
to. Yeah. Now, just briefly, I guess, I wanted to touch on whether we think that the Wheaton effect, the tabletop effect, is decreasing. Now, Sam, have you watched any of Will Wheaton's Tabletop, the YouTube channel?
Yeah, I've got a few episodes.
Okay, and has it made you more interested in the games they're playing, or is it just sort of a curiosity, do you reckon?
It did when I first started in the hobby.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. And now you just basically call friends and go, have you got anything new? I'm coming around.
Basically, yeah.
Okay. Cool, fair enough.
So, I mean, they're up to season 4 in Tabletop, but the different thing this year is, they've gone to one of those paywall type channels called Alpha, which I don't know much about. It's like an online thing. But then they do eventually still go to YouTube, but they're delayed. And look, I just had a quick a look at some stats in terms of YouTube views.
Oh, you love a stat, don't you?
Okay. So, look, one of the biggest episodes ever they had on Tabletop was Small World. It was one of the very first, if not the first, maybe, with Grant Imahara from Mythbusters and Jenna Bush. General Hot Girl. now, obviously, that one's been out the longest, but that one's had 2.7 million views.
Yeah.
Resistance,
yeah.
Which had Felicia Day,
yep.
Obviously very popular in Geek and Sundry. That one has also had 2.7 million views. Munchkin, where they actually had Steve Jackson on there playing Munchkin with them, as well as Felicia Day. That's had 2.6 million views. Pandemic with Ed Brubaker,
yeah.
Of course, the famous comics writer.
One of the best writers in the world, that's comics right. or otherwise.
That had 2 million views. Mm. Dead of Winter with... repeat tabletopper Grant Imahara again,
yep.
has had 2 million views. Cards Against Humanity, where they went berserk.
Oh, that was...
There was lots of crazy really language.
Yeah.
That was had 2 million views. Betrayal at House on the Hill, 1.7 million views. Forbidden Desert with Alan Tudyk,
yep.
1.4 million views.
So they've done all right, is what you're saying.
Yeah, so that's up to season 4. Now, I know season 4 hasn't been out that long, but so far they've had Lanterns. Oh, God. Yeah. 800,000. Champions of Midgard, 800,000. Monarch, 575,000. Tiny Epic Galaxies,
yep.
700,000. And Fury of Dracula, the first part got 560,000. The second part is only about 300,000. Now, I know they're a lot newer, but those numbers are really down.
Yeah, but you've also... Yeah, I definitely don't think they will get up there the same as the first ones, but it's to do with the games as well. Like, cause none of those games.
I was going to say.
The games are not bad that they've played. I don't think they've played a bad game on that show ever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when we're talking Small World, Fury of Dracula, you know, Betrayal, Dead of Winter and stuff, they definitely.
Fury of Dracula was one of the latest ones.
Okay. Well, I got that one wrong. but all the rest
that one's
of them,
only new. But you're right.
Even people like in the hobby don't know what a Champion of Midgar is and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, and I mean Lanterns, Snore.
Yeah, pretty much.
Ho hum. So look, I'm just curious to see. I think going behind the paywall has really affected it.
Yeah.
And I think there's just the it's tabletop. They're the sort of. Maybe they've run out of B-listers and they're now up to the C-listers or the people that have been on, a couple of times. I just think it's not having the same effect that it was having.
And you've also got to remember that board gamers, just like any sort of geek culture, we're all snobs. Anything that gets big, anything that gets big enough, like people walking around going like things like, oh, Star Wars is just, even geeks just like, oh, yes. It's rubbish. It's not rubbish. It's just not for you. Calm down. Like to say that show is bad. No, if it's just not for you, that's fine. Yeah. But it's done amazing things for these. I don't think I'd probably be into the hobby as much as I am now if it wasn't for that show. Because I know that show got me to buy King of Tokyo, got me to buy Betrayal and a few other things, which are still to this day some of my favourite games.
Well, there's certainly, things like Tabletop, things like a fantastic podcast like the Dice Men Cometh.
I've heard
have
of
obviously
them.
Influenced people's purchasing patterns.
Speaking of which, Sam, before on the drive here, you said you'd heard of this show years ago. Somebody on a train mentioned it.
Yeah, it was a year or two ago on the way to PAX, actually.
Oh,
really?
I ran into a guy who just struck up a conversation, and I mentioned I was from Hobart. And then, he spouted off about listening to your podcast. And...
Woohoo! Yay! Internet fame!
It's almost like fame. It's almost. It's not. It's not at all, but it's almost like it.
Ah, fantastic. And look, we're going to be at PAX again this year.
We certainly are.
We don't know what we're doing yet, but we're going to be doing something. Now, just a couple of bits of news before the end. Now, this is not for everyone, but I'm sure plenty of people out there would love to go to Epic Nerd Camp 2017. It's taking place in August over a couple of sort of long weekends. Now, unfortunately, you've got to get to Steruka, Pennsylvania to get there. But look.
In August? No, I'm going to September, Steruka.
Well, it's funny. I'm actually going to Colorado in August now.
Really? Look at you, big boy.
So, look, I don't know. But look, what you can do there, you can learn how to make chainmail, jewelry, stained glass.
Oh, you started with
You can do mail. Tabletop games. You can learn circus. You can do LARPing. For those who don't know, it's live action role playing.
Well, you built the bloody chainmail. You'd want to hope
That's
so.
That's exactly right. And boffer games and sword play and archery and horseback riding and pioneering, which is apparently sort of like, what's that running thing? Without the running.
Oh, I know what you mean.
Parkour.
Oh, that wasn't
So it's
what I
climbing
was thinking
walls,
of.
Rappelling and belaying. You can do swimming and mermaid lessons. And you can do... Box battle, where you bring your cardboard army to the field and fight until it all falls apart.
I've seen them on YouTube. They're good stuff.
That sounds really interesting. If you want to know more, just Google Epic Nerd Camp, particularly for our non-Australian listeners.
Yes, indeed.
Now, a couple more quick games coming out soon. Bethesda, we all know that name.
Yes, we certainly do.
So they've licensed their Fallout work to Modiphius Entertainment to produce a miniatures game, Fallout Wasteland Warfare. Now, in this game, players will command a crew of 32mm resin miniatures through player v player, co-op, and solo tabletop missions, which can include as few as three or as many as 30 miniatures per side. Now, the game will draw mainly from the plots of Fallout 3 and 4, with all the minis actually being sculpts from Fallout 4.
Yeah.
Although Modiphius does, of course, have access to Fallout 1 and 2, so expansions.
No one played those games, I don't think, did they say? No, no one. They haven't taken hundreds of hours of my life and everybody else's life at all.
And look, speaking of crossing empires, Catalyst Games have teamed up with Wizards of the Coast to produce Dragonfire, which is a co-op deck-building game based on the D&D role-playing game. Now, Catalyst created Shadowrun Crossfire, which is a deck-building game. So this is basically a fantasy reworking of that game, where you're in the Forgotten Realms in the Sword Coast, which is, of course, the part of the D&D world that everyone loves. It's designed to be played as... You can play it as one-off adventures. You can have multiple plays to a campaign. You can develop your characters and level up. And, of course, there's going to be umpteen squillion expansions for this.
But, of course.
So, I mean, I'm a deck builder fan. I'm a D&D fan. I'm really interested in that. And finally, the American Mensa Society has announced the winners from its annual Mind Games competition.
Ooh.
So, games for brainiacs. They do this every year. Now, usually, most of these games, if not all of these games, we have never even heard of. They're more in for those puzzly type of games. But this year, five winners, Amalgam, sounds like dentist filling to me, Around the World in 80 Days, which there's been a couple of variations of. The Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle is Mensa material.
I've heard good things about that, yet I've not played it.
Imagine by Game Right, don't know, but Clank, a deck-building adventure, which is on my wish list. As soon as Polymorph Games gets it back in stock, there's a copy coming towards me, which I've actually paid for.
With a discount code podcast, all capital letters?
Well, if it depends when the stock comes in. Because that discount code, I think it's only up until sometime early in May. We'll post it on the Facebook page.
We will.
But, yeah, it's just interesting. Normally, those Mensa games, there's nothing really in there from our type of games.
Yep.
So I was really interested to see Clank in there.
Yeah. Also, Marvel Legendary, because the game that I've played a thousand times.
Yes.
They have an expansion coming out soon, funnily enough, because they bring those out. The biggest one they've ever done, which is a new X-Men expansion, but it's like 400-something-odd cards.
It's massive, I've heard,
Which is bigger than the base game. And X-Men they were the best thing in like the Marvel Universe. I know that's going to change now with the films and stuff. But comic book-wise, they were the thing that kept Marvel afloat for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And they haven't focused on them much of late because of issues. But I'm happy to see that back because, you know, as we all know, that Cyclops is, you know, the best character in the Marvel Universe. Isn't that right, Sam? We were talking about it on the way in?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I have to disagree with you on that one.
It's true. He was. He was amazing.
Oh, okay. Well, look,
he's dead now. Don't worry.
Funnily enough, we've used up all our time.
Oh, lovely.
We haven't got any more pennies to put into the meter.
No.
How's that for old school speak? but look, we'll be back again next week with another show. As I said, we will have a dice woman, Tanya, to tell us all about GX Australia. And thank you again so much to Polymorph Games and Hobbies who have sponsored us this week. They are, of course, proud supporters of Australia's finest gaming podcast. That is us. We will be back next week to talk to you more. So in the meantime, have fun on International Tabletop Day.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh, thanks to polymorphgames.com.au. You can say hello to the Dice Men on Facebook, Instagram, and www.dicemencometh.com. You can support us by leaving a review on iTunes or by becoming a Patreon supporter for as little as just $1 per month. Thank you.